to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
Since the 1950s, Eugene and many cities across the U.S. dedicated large parts of their communities for single-family detached housing only. Roughly 90% of Eugene's neighborhoods are zoned R1, which is our low-density residential zone. This is referred to in the planning field as exclusionary zoning.
Because I'm very well aware of Oregon's racist history, as Terry pointed out and went into depth about, and also just the inequities in housing in general. I think I was like 19 when I was invited to the panel, so I'm 20 years old now. So I obviously don't know very, very much about housing. I've never, you know, even thought about owning a house, taking out a loan for a house. I've only ever rented apartments. And so at the beginning of all of this, I kind of felt as though I didn't know enough. I wasn't knowledgeable enough.
And delivered the fundamental principles that Sandler had enumerated that will govern the implementation of HB 2001 in Eugene and the code that they must abide by. We are still in the middle of the project. In the middle of this month, actually, the panel will be reconvening to review the drafted code with an eye towards their fidelity to the principles the panel has formulated.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, Lane County, and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's February 5th, 2021 program. Missing middle housing. What is it? Why do we need it? And how do we get it? My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club president. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. In today's program, we discuss missing middle housing. What is it? Why do we need it? How do we get it? Speakers include Terry Harding, principal planner for the City of Eugene, and two members of the planning review panel, Sam and Robert. I would like to thank Karin Knutson and John Belcher for organizing and coordinating today's program. This City Club program is the first in a three-part series on local housing issues. In 2019, concerned about housing affordability, the Oregon legislature passed House Bill 2001, which re-legalizes traditional missing middle housing types, allowing duplexes on all parcels zoned for detached single-family residential use, and allowing triplexes, fourplexes, cottage clusters, and townhouses in areas zoned for residential use. By June 30, 2022, larger Oregon cities like Eugene will need to implement new zoning that meets the law's minimum requirements, or the state-approved model code will go into effect. But passage of HB 2001 isn't the beginning of Eugene's history with the elusive missing middle. Stroll along one of Eugene's historic streetcar lines, our earliest transit-oriented development, and you'll find duplexes, quads, and small masonry apartment buildings nestled among walkable neighborhoods and mature street trees. In 2017, the City of Eugene produced a missing middle handbook to review the characteristics of these traditional housing types, and then completed a land use code audit, which identified numerous barriers to the development of housing for all income levels as envisioned by our comprehensive plan. In 2019, participants in the city's housing tools and strategies process collectively endorsed actions to encourage more diverse housing options and creative solutions. Since then, Eugene has been on a winding path and through a global pandemic, but HB 2001 has a deadline. This program will introduce HB 2001 describe the characteristics of missing middle housing, summarize Oregon's integrated land use planning goals with emphasis on Goal 1, citizen involvement, and Goal 10, housing, and explain the innovative citizen involvement processes the City of Eugene is using to develop its missing middle code, a randomly selected, demographically representative, deliberative panel of 29 local residents. Karin, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you to our City Club members and listeners for joining us today for this program on missing middle housing. A few additional comments, because today's program is a little bit unusual. I wanted to spend some time introducing the representatives from the Deliberative Planning Review Panel who are joining us today. This panel is a partnership of the City of Eugene working with the nonprofit, nonpartisan organization Healthy Democracy. They worked together to assemble a deliberative panel of 29 randomly selected Eugene community members who had applied to join this process. And the two speakers joining us from the panel today are using their first names only to maintain the integrity of the process. This panel is Oregon's first lottery selected review panel on a major urban planning project, and it's one of several ways that Eugene residents will be able to participate in the local implementation of House Bill 2001. Our third speaker today, in addition to Robert and Sam, is Terry Harding, Principal Planner of Community Planning and Design Teams at the City of Eugene. And I'm gonna hand it off to Terry.
Thank you, Karin. Good afternoon. As Karin said, my name is Terry Harding. I'm the Principal Planner with Eugene's Planning Team and the Project Manager for the City's work on middle housing. As you just heard from Scott, House Bill 2001 was passed by the Oregon Legislature in 2019 to begin to address the housing crisis across the state. It requires large cities like Eugene to update our zoning to allow housing types that were common before World War II, but were largely excluded by zoning ordinances after the war. Since the 1950s, Eugene and many cities across the US dedicated large parts of their communities for single-family detached housing only. Roughly 90% of Eugene's neighborhoods are zoned R1, which is our low-density residential zone. This is referred to in the planning field as exclusionary zoning because it excludes anything other than single-family detached housing, with some exceptions. The middle housing types that used to be built alongside single-family homes pre-war include duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes, which are usually attached together, homes of two, three, or four per building. Cottage clusters, which are small homes grouped around a common courtyard, and townhouses, which are a group of homes attached side by side. All of these housing forms can be seen in older parts of Eugene, with a prevalence near downtown and the University of Oregon. We're also fortunate to have extremely talented affordable housing developers in our community, and they have been building middle housing for decades around the city. Check out Woodleaf Village, Turtle Creek, and Willikensy Crossing, for example. A few years ago, the city put together a missing middle handbook, which you can find on our website and includes a walking tour of the downtown West Side neighborhood. People can view all of the middle housing types from the street or alley along this route. Allowing more middle housing throughout our city as we grow can help us meet the diverse needs of future households. In Eugene, we have a growing number of smaller households, increasing racial and ethnic diversity, and a large unmet demand for more affordable housing. Homes in the middle housing range tend to be more affordable by being smaller in size and sharing walls, which contributes to energy efficiency. We can also plan for more housing options near transit corridors, helping to reduce our carbon footprint. At this point in the city's process, we're asking for public input on a variety of middle housing questions. The state has adopted rules to guide cities in updating their zoning codes. We're launching a survey that asks questions about how the City of Eugene should respond to the rules. Should we do more, or should we do the minimum to allow middle housing as spelled out by the state? Or should we do more and encourage middle housing by reducing regulations and increasing flexibility? Or should we go even further and incentivize middle housing by offering fee reductions or density bonuses? For example, near transit lines or if the homes are offered at affordable prices. We call these options levels of implementation. And the survey walks through examples of how the city could regulate things like parking and design standards at the allow, encourage, or incentivize levels. Engaging in housing policy in this new way builds on Oregon's legacy of statewide planning. Since the early 1970s, every community has been required to have a state-approved urban growth boundary and comprehensive plan, which must address projected housing needs of residents 20 years into the future under Goal 10, the housing goal. The middle housing legislation represents a pretty major paradigm shift to planning for our housing needs to meet the social, economic, and environmental challenges of our time. A total of 19 statewide planning goals provide a framework for Oregon cities to work within, starting with Goal 1, citizen involvement. Eugene's approach to writing middle housing code includes an intentional focus on equity and inclusion, and greatly exceeds the requirements of Goal 1. By limiting the types of housing that could be built in certain neighborhoods, exclusionary zoning also excluded whole classes of people, including Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and people with low incomes. Exclusionary zoning was widely used across the states and resulted in wholly segregated communities, which has been carefully documented in the 2017 book, The Color of Law. In Oregon, this history is especially harmful, as non-white people were excluded from even living in the state by the Oregon Constitution until 1926. Eugene's low numbers of community members of color illustrate that our exclusionary policies of the past have a lasting impact today. To begin to address the inequities of past planning policies, our outreach for this project includes that focus on equity and inclusion. It continues all of the traditional outreach methods, such as our website, surveys, and boards and commissions meetings, but it includes some new things too. An equity roundtable, building on the work started for the Climate Action Plan, new social media platforms, such as Huge Planning on Instagram and Facebook Live conversations, and a partnership with Healthy Democracy, a nonprofit based in Portland, but actually born in Eugene. We are the first city, as Karen mentioned, to ask Healthy Democracy to help us engage a broadly representative group of Eugene community members to weigh in on a planning issue. The randomly selected participants were balanced across 7 demographic factors. They include council ward of residence, age, income, educational attainment, race and ethnicity, experience with a disability, and whether the household owns or rents its home. The panel is like Eugene in a room, but like no public meeting I've ever attended about a planning issue. We're hearing from a variety of voices that we don't typically reach, and the conversations have been so valuable to both the middle housing work and to public engagement generally. So I'm very thrilled to hand it over to Sam, one of the panelists, to share her perspective about serving on this panel.
Amazing, thank you so much, Terry. My name is Sam, or Sammy. I use the pronouns she, they, and I served on the panel, or am serving on the Healthy Democracy panel this year for HB 2001. I joined the panel, so let's see. I'm a college student. I rent this apartment that I'm living in right now. And when I received the invitation to join the panel, or potentially be on the panel, I was very enthusiastic. I felt kind of empowered by, you know, all of what it outlined and all of kind of what it pertained to. I've always been very passionate about social justice and environmental justice, and I felt that housing was a really perfect intersection between the two, because it's also a disparity that I have, you know, been very familiar with as a young low-income person in Eugene. I haven't lived here for very long. I actually moved here in February of last year, so it's been almost a whole year. And so I was really interested in getting to know a lot more about the housing issues in this particular area, and also in Oregon as a whole, because I'm very well aware of Oregon's racist history, as Terry pointed out and went into depth about, and also just the inequities in housing in general. I think I was like 19 when I was invited to the panel, so I'm 20 years old now. So I obviously don't know very, very much about housing. I've never
you know, even thought about owning a house, taking out a loan for a house. I've only ever rented apartments. And so at the beginning of all of this, I kind of felt as though maybe I was not, I didn't know enough. I wasn't knowledgeable enough, but I filled it out anyway. And I heard back and was invited to join the panel, which was really empowering, but also very scary because I was afraid I wouldn't have anything to say at all. But the lottery style way of going about it was really enticing. And I really wanted to represent, you know, young, low income people going to college. So I remember the first meeting was a lot of information that I didn't know much about, although I'd heard about HB 2001. And it was actually really, really nice to have a lot of people in the room with a diversity of backgrounds and experiences and, you know, levels of knowledge about housing and their own experiences with it. So I didn't feel very alone or, you know, unknowledgeable, I suppose. I felt like I fit for sure. We were all over the board with how much we knew, but we all had a very common interest, which was that we wanted to help other people and also ourselves and make housing more equitable, accessible, and affordable for all. So the panel has developed a number of project principles. I have only selected 10 to read off because I figured that was appropriate for the amount of time we have today. We selected these principles through a democratic, fair, all-inclusive, patient, and individually empowering group-oriented process of listening to speakers that know so much about housing in a variety of categories and disciplines, taking notes, learning a lot. Again, a lot of us didn't know a bunch to start out with, so we were very excited and enthusiastic to learn anything. And then some of us had a wealth of knowledge in certain areas, and so it was really wonderful to go into, you know, breakout discussion rooms and be able to, you know, pick their brains and then also, like, you know, kind of feel what it felt like to learn that information and then run with that in, you know, whatever direction felt right. It felt very, it was very engaging, very positively affirming, very, you know, community-minded, I suppose. It felt like you were a part of a huge community of people that really only had the best interest of, you know, the community of Eugene and also, you know, Oregon, and even on a wider scale in mind, and that common interest, though some of us disagreed on certain things, that common interest was very exciting to be a part of and to, you know, keep in mind. And there wasn't really a lot of disagreement. Like, people have all sorts of opinions as to how, you know, we should go about things, but I thought personally that it was a very patient, very civil, very democratic process of going about deciding on the principles. We voted through, like, the Zoom poll feature. So we all got a say, we all felt heard and seen. And I was actually a part of the community liaison group. So I'm not sure if anybody in this room has seen the video that we created, but we also did a little bit of a, like, testimonial video on people's experiences, and overwhelmingly everyone felt heard. That was really exciting to know and to see. I'm going to go into the principles now and just give a little brief outline and maybe go into depth a bit about what they mean. Some of them are a little bit, like, elusive and ambiguous, but that's why we have extra information. So our number one principle, and these are organized by a number of, like, basically everybody voted, and some of them, you know, were tied, and so they used a random number generator to break those ties and to figure out how to consecutively lay them out. And so the first principle that was overwhelmingly most supported was that affordable housing is of paramount importance. So rent is over half a person's income at this point. 60% is what we found, which is a lot. That's a lot of our income. So affordability must be a priority. That can keep people from affording the amount of food they need every month. That can keep, you know, families from being able to supply their children with, you know, school books and clothes and supplies. So that is definitely huge. And I, even as, you know, a 20-year-old low-income person, have definitely experienced that, you know, oh my goodness, I don't have, like, enough, you know, and that feeling of not having enough is, can be really hard and is kind of terrifying. Number two was our provision for continuous improvement of policy. So essentially what that means is what we create will need to be revisited in the future or revised. We wanted to establish a periodic form of review process on existing policy to change accordingly. And basically that would look like forming a review process that is at least as representative and as inclusive as this panel. So the lottery process was definitely part of that, and you know, also just making sure inclusivity and accommodation and accessibility are, you know, prioritized. Number three was to expedite the process of securing affordable housing for those that need it most. We said reduce the red tape. Basically, we wanted to make sure that once, you know, we start possibly building, you know, affordable housing and middle housing, that it becomes a great priority and that we're able to make sure that happens as soon as possible. And so reducing any of the red tape that exists and trying to really push that process forward. Number four was maintaining the affordability for newly constructed middle housing when replacing existing affordable housing structures. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Number five is that zoning codes need to serve the needs of the general population. So they need to speak to a minimum level of habitability. And we all pretty much agreed on that, because any young low-income person can attest to the fact that we've lived in some pretty dumpy apartments. Number six, rentals need to be affordable and habitable and accessible. So that was very similar to the previous one and also self-explanatory, I think. Number seven is that we must refrain from tearing down existing habitable, affordable housing and discourage replacing it with higher cost housing. Number eight is to protect and preserve our natural resources, such as the Amazon headwaters, and features our city holds dear as well, such as open spaces, green spaces, playgrounds, and gathering spaces. We also added especially for children. Number nine is build for the foreseeable future. Age and other demographics are changing. It is important to have middle housing that can cater to an older population and people with disabilities, allowing them to live and ideally thrive. This is important because houses are often too big for one or two people. And last but not least, because there are so many priorities that we have listed, is to address houselessness or homelessness with practical solutions like tiny homes, transitional housing, and townhomes. More parks of tiny homes like Emerald Park or cottage clusters for homeless individuals, something that gives a homeless person a sense of dignity and a place that they can call their own. So the overarching goals of the panel and of HB 2001 were democratic processes, inclusivity, affordability of housing, access to affordable housing, climate change mediation and environmentalism as a priority, and then more consolidated or dense housing, such as apartments, duplexes, smaller structures, and eventually or ideally housing for all. And I think that was something, or those were all things that all of the panelists shared and had in common. We just all had different ways of going about how that might look. So it was really interesting to be a part of that. And it was very discussion-based in many ways. I've learned so much by being on the panel. It was, again, very empowering. I'm gonna use that word all the time because it did feel incredible. I am a social justice activist and advocate, so it always feels good to be a part of something. It also taught me that I don't need to know everything about one thing to have a voice and affect positive change. I can go in knowing the bare minimum and rely on my community to educate me, but also to, you know, be with me in the same like space, right? We were all very, you know, similarly on the same page. We all didn't know very much. Some of us knew a lot. And so once I finally like went to the first meeting, I realized that I was not alone in that. And that feeling of, you know, it's okay. Like there are no expectations for me to be anywhere except for where I am, because ultimately I'm here to learn and make change, was very helpful and affirming and kept me, you know, calm, kept my anxiety calm, I guess. It was also very inspiring to see a democratic process like this one. I think that all of us can sort of attest back that these last few years have kind of felt like democracy is dwindling, and it's very hard to, you know, feel like it works. You know, we know it works, but it's hard to like see that in action. And so it was wonderful to, you know, amidst everything going on politically at that point and now, it was wonderful to be a part of something that, you know, really restored my faith in democracy and
made me excited to get involved with other democratic processes that I know now work and exist and are really, really important to making change and actually getting the ball rolling in certain areas. I'm going to pass it off to Robert. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. It's a delight to hear from you as always and from Terry. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Robert, and I am one of the members of the deliberative panel helping the city of Eugene with the implementation of HB 2001. I've been tasked to speak on a little bit of a different tangent in this topic, and my task is to talk about the underlying structure of the process itself, so, and the wider implications of what that process can have. So today I will speak about three things in no particular order. First is the overview about the structure and the process of the deliberative panel for HB 2001. Second is my experience as a panelist and the reason I participated. And last, my thoughts about this type of approach towards community involvement and the larger implications of what this can deliver overall. Okay, so structure. There are three primary groups involved in this deliberative panel. The panel itself, composed of the volunteers, the steering committee functioning as an oversight group composed of stakeholders from the city council, the planning commission, planning department, Healthy Democracy, outside parties, and two representatives lifted from the process oversight subgroup of the larger panel. The third group are the moderators group, led by Lynn Davis and Alex Ranieri from Healthy Democracy. Adjunct to the project are independent observers around the world. Observers were generally not visible to us, and we're very careful not to participate at all. We also divided into task groups to perform specific tasks. As the name suggests, this group was empaneled to deliberate on HB 2001 and delivered the fundamental principles that Sam there had enumerated that will govern the implementation of HB 2001 in Eugene and the code that that they must abide by. We are still in the middle of the project. In the middle of this month, actually, the panel will be reconvening to review the drafted code with an eye towards their fidelity to the principles the panel has formulated, the 10 that Sam just listed through. We will make suggestions for improvement and await the final draft from the planning department. We met first as a group on November 10th last year. The panel as a whole has met about nine times. There were some task committee work that had to be done, so that was done offline. We are scheduled to meet about five more times. Let's see, the first six meetings were devoted to listening to presenters on a number of subjects. Some of these were touched on by both Terry and Sam. It gave us the different perspectives on the subject. It also ensured that the group would have a common baseline of understanding of the bill and the topics and issues that surround it. It was not our expectation to do a deep dive into the minutiae of the bill, but we did learn a whole lot. The next three meetings were devoted to drafting the principles submitted to the planning department to help inform the drafting of the 2001 implementation code. We completed those principles at our last meeting. Our process is iterative. I think that in itself is a wonderful feature. Iterations are necessary because we do not have often not enough information at the onset of a project to know all the variables that would give us all the meaningful conclusions that we need. We need to go forward with whatever information we have at first, and then revisit our assumptions, and then move forward towards a better outcome. True, there are traditional models that there can be used like a town hall model, but this often devolved into rancorous and partisan discussions. The tenor of the conversation often goes to the group with the most representation, the loudest voice in the room, so to speak. I think this model provides a balanced way of citizens to participate, this deliberative model, because it's so representative of the population. And it can be an effective tool in many levels. It can be designed to be free of political interference and bias, if need be. It can be tailored towards projects, commissions, or tasks where the wider community involvement is necessary or desired. I came to this panel with my own long experience in process methodology. I have worked with technology for about 40 years, mainly in Silicon Valley as a chief technology officer, an advanced systems engineer, and lately as a consulting technology architect helping develop ideas into businesses. And if there is an industry that relishes the pursuit of process perfection, it is high tech. A mistake can have critical or even fatal consequences. Think of the software that runs airplanes, your cars, or even traffic lights. Bugs in these environments can be very deadly, so we study process and push the limits of its mechanics. And thus far, I've been very happy with the process that we have gone through in this deliberative panel. My experience with this project has largely been positive. There were a few hiccups, as one can expect, but none that would really approach a critical derailment of the project nor dampen my enthusiasm at participating. The oversight committee and the moderators have worked hard to ensure that our meetings were free of bias towards one view or another and not affect our discussions and outcomes. It's very democratic, as Sam had alluded to. And this was very evident in all our meetings, from the presenters that were selected, some by the panelists, a group, some by a list drafted by the steering committee. We heard details about the housing situation in Eugene. I've enjoyed hearing different perspectives and learning about things from other people like Sam and Terry and all the rest of the group. And the information we heard was at times encouraging, at times depressing, and sometimes disturbing, I must admit. Some of it opened my eyes on matters that I'm not as deeply familiar with, like the details of zoning laws and how, either because of unintended consequence or coincidence or purposeful design, have devolved into mechanisms that further the machinations of systemic racism. We have all come to learn that there's a severe housing shortage of middle housing in Oregon and in Eugene. In Eugene, particularly, most of our housing is either single family homes or apartment buildings. And we are missing that middle, as Terry and Sam had mentioned, from accessory dwelling units, ADUs, to duplexes, triplexes, row houses, and courtyard apartments. Places where our residents of middle or even lower incomes can find a place to live. Most of Eugene has been zoned pretty exclusively for single homes, and HB 2000 is designed to address that, to remediate that in Eugene and across Oregon. During this process, we learned also how historically housing and zoning was systematically planned, as Terry had introduced earlier, to exclude people of color from neighborhoods also all across the United States, in Oregon and in Eugene. Why did I participate? For me, that is both a simple and a complex personal matter. So first, simple. Participation was to be online because of the pandemic and scheduled for evening meetings. So it was convenient, really. I mean, frankly, I did not have to travel, prepare, and devote a large chunk of time, you know, commuting. And the time actually was devoted to being in the meeting itself. The second reason is a little bit more personal, more complex. My father was a freedom fighter in the fight against the Japanese during World War II. when I was about to go to college, encouraged me to not only pick up a trade, but go to college and become a man of letters, and attaining that to understand the meaning of freedom. You see, I grew up under the iron fist of a dictatorship, an autocratic government under martial law that only wanted to perpetuate power in the hands of the very few. Now, having moved here, I was given a different perspective in the United States as a citizen. In a democracy, the other side of freedom is social responsibility. It is a cost that we must pay. And at its core, social responsibility is about caring about freedom, not just for ourselves, but for the freedom of others. And this does not have to be manifested in the grand gestures of being a president or running for Senate or whatever. It can be gestures that are simple and innocuous to be noticed. It can be as simple as, say, lowering your voice when you're talking on a mobile phone while in a public space, for example, so that others can enjoy that same space, or looking forward to serving in jury duty instead of actively finding ways to avoid it. Or, in this case, providing any help against the war on poverty instead of fighting its victims like the homeless. It simply means that we protect the freedoms of those who cannot. A society without a common allegiance to social responsibility will face the demise of the fidelity or faith in that democracy. My participation, therefore, in conclusion, after that long list, my participation is my way of exercising that social responsibility. Now, like I said, it does not have to be this grand scale that is visible to everyone, but in the big scheme of things, what is important is our participation at any level that becomes vital to this democracy. And this is why this experience with a deliberative panel is so important, because it makes easier for people to become part of the governance of their community. It reflects in a microcosm what this American experiment we call democracy is. I think that the more it is employed by communities and local governments, the stronger we can make our democracy. In closing, I will share one last thought. We cannot have social responsibility without the ability to listen with compassion, seek out unvarnished truth, and most of all, to act ethically in our society. Because these are the things that would guarantee that a democracy will endure. As my late father has drilled into me, we should not act because of some ideology of this or that, or because somebody managed to pervert a truth that we blindly follow, or for any other reason. The only reason we should act is that because it is the right thing to do.
This has been our February 5th, 2021 program. Missing middle housing. What is it? Why do we need it? How do we get it? And a special thank you to public radio station KLCC FM 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Mondays at 7 p.m. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page. If you're not yet a member, more information is on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. More details and information about future programs can be found online at the City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. Now I'd like to give a generous thanks to today's speakers for a great program. Terry Harding, Sam, Robert, and Karin, thank you for an illuminating presentation. This concludes today's program. Be well and stay safe.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our Facebook page for more topics. We hope you are inspired to join us for our next podcast episode.